Okay, connection. All right, so we're holding on the first line of the wide lines on Samach Beis Amud Aleph. We said in the Mishnah that you have seven types of chemicals that you use to check, that you use on a stain, on a stain of blood that's on clothing. First of all, it tells you whether, the stain is blood or dye, because if it comes off with these seven, then you know it's blood, and if it doesn't, then it's dye. With that said, by the way, there are Rishonim who learn, and there's a possibility that it actually may hold that way in the sugya, that actually there is the possibility that even if they don't come off, it still might be blood, because sometimes you have blood is deeply enough absorbed into it that just doing the seven summonim on it at least one time is not going to be enough to remove it. So if they come off, you know it's blood, but if it doesn't, then according to that, you might not know for sure. There still is the slight possibility that it might be blood, although the more likely thing is that it's dye. The other way of looking at it is we would say it's definitely dye.
Okay. Blood is not any substance, can be removed from chemicals.
Fine, but it's the only, we're talking about that you were talking about, there's no reason to think that anything else got on there, right? I mean, if we have reason to think that it's blood from some other source, fine, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, the only thing is, we know that it was, we know it was used by a woman who may have become nigger. So now the question is, is it blood from nigger, which would make it tummy, or is it, yeah. Okay. But then we said, So you have these seven chemicals. If it causes it to come off, we know it's blood. If we don't, then we know it's dye. Or according to some Rishonim, we would say maybe the most likely thing is to dye, but there still is a slight possibility that it's blood. All right. So we said in the Mishnah, it's biloy va'asa chola. We said in the Mishnah, suppose that you have this clothing, you have this piece of cloth which is stained, and suppose you're not sure, let's say, whether the stain was blood, so you toiveled it in order to make it tahor, and you used it for taharis, then you put the shiva sammonim on it, and nothing came off, then you know that it's dye, therefore the taharis remain tahor because dye. According to the other Rishonim, what we would say is, in other words, that if it didn't come off, there still is the slight possibility that it's blood, but at that point, since you did the Shiva Sanmonim, and since you had previously toiveled it, then it's good enough to consider it Tahor. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braise, the Hever all of Shiva Sanmonim Velo Ovar, suppose that you used all seven chemicals on it, and the stain still didn't go away, then sapun v'over, then you use on it sapun, and then it caused the stain to go away. Sapun is soap, right? Yeah, it's related to it in a number of European languages. You have words like sapon or whatever that means soap. In English, the English word soap is related to that. Sabon in Hebrew, yeah, so all of them are related. Yeah, sabon is the modern Hebrew word for soap, yeah. So all of them are related to this word sapun, yeah. So if you use sapun on it, v'ovar, and then the stain went away, taharis of tmeis, then we say that whatever taharis you used, that came in contact with this cloth, are tummy. So the question is why? Sapun seven nami ma'avar. What do you mean? Sapun is strong enough to remove even dye. Again, it's not like nowadays where they have color-fast dyes. Their dyes now in those days weren't so color-fast as to be able to withstand sapun. So if you use sapun, how does it prove that it was blood? Maybe it was dye after all. L or no? What we have to correct the braisa a little bit. Hever all of shisha sammon and v'loyavar. Suppose that you use six out of the seven chemicals and the stain still didn't go away. Hever all of sapon v'loyavar. Then you use sapon and only then did the stain go away. Then taharis of tmeis. Then the taharis remained tomei. Shem hever shvi mechila. Because after all, you don't know. Had you used the seventh one to begin with, shema avar might have also made it go away. So therefore, in other words, the fact that you used six doesn't prove anything yet. Now Tosfos points out, so what's the chiddush in it? We said in the Mishnah you have to use all seven. Tosfos says, because you would think that if even the first six didn't even make it change color at all, usually you would expect the first few make it, they start making it change color, start fading a little bit, and then as you use more and more of them, here like this, you did six of them and it still stays the same intensity. So you would think, therefore, that maybe it shows it's not blood after all, and therefore the fact that you use sapun on it. No, you have to use all seven, and without that, you have to be machmir, because after all, because it might be. It might be that the first six don't have an effect on it, and it might be that only in this particular case, the seventh one would have finally had an effect. Okay. Tanya Idach, we learn in another braisa. Hevrol of shiva sammon and v'le'ovar. Suppose that you used all seven chemicals on it, and stain didn't go away. shnon va'ovar, then you use them again in the same order, and then the stain went away. Taros of tahoros, then the taros, then the taros are tahor. Because now, because now you can assume, in other words, that now obviously it has to be blood, because if it was dye, then doing it the second time wouldn't have made it go away. Omer Rav Zera, so Rav Zera says, Lo Shonu, this that was saying in the Braisa, the Taros of Tahoris, when is it talking about? Is it talking about after the first round, or is it talking about after the second round? So he says, Lo Shonu Ela Hataris Shanasu Ben Tichboisis Rishonu Lashnia. It only applies to Taris that you did between the first application and the second application. So you did the first application, nothing happened, it didn't go away. So at that point, as we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to assume it's dye, and therefore the taris are tar. Abel, taris, shenasu, acha, tichboisis, shnia, but, says Rav Zera, that if you did the seven chemicals the second time, which then caused it to go away, and then you used it for taros before toveling it again, taros of tmeis, then those taros are actually going to become tummy. Share hikpid olav, because in this case what you did is by doing all the chemicals a second time, you show that you were makpid on it. You show that you weren't just ready to be mevaselet, and the fact is we see that they did go away. So therefore, we see that after all, that's what the Gemara is going to ask on Amud Beis. But the point is, in other words, that if it hadn't gone away after the second time, then you would say, Tosa says, then okay, you would say that the fact that he was makpid doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is it's die. So the fact that he was makpid is neither here nor there.
But he said one time.
So Rav Zera is talking about if he did it two times. The fact that we had the Braita is talking about two times. So Rav Zera has to explain it. So what we're saying, so what Rav Zera is saying is that because you did them all a second time and you were makpid, and in fact it turned out that it really was blood after all, therefore those pirates are going to be tummy, unless you tovel the begging fruit. So the question is why? Amalei Rav Abba l'Rav Ashi, so Rav Abba asked Rav Ashi, like you just said, Midib Kedah Talia Milta. Since when does it depend on whether he's makpid or not? You're saying that the taris that were done after the first application are taller, because you're not considering it blood. At that point, you're considering it dye. How can you say that now, because he's makbid, then retroactively you're saying that it's considered blood? No, so what's the logic then? In that case, retroactively, you would have to say that the ones he did after the first tichboises, after the first application, would also be taller. So Rav Ashi tells him, yes, as a matter of fact, we can prove that it does in fact make a difference. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Chiya Omer, Dam Hanida Vadai, suppose you have blood on there which is definitely Dam Nida. Now, in our Mishnah, we were talking about it's a sophic, whether it was Dam Nida. Namely, you found a stain on it. The regular case of Ketem that we've been discussing in the previous Perek and in our Perek, you find a stain on it. You don't know 100% for sure that it even came from the woman, let alone that it's definitely blood from her uterus. It might be from some external source. Or if it's from her, it might not be from her uterus or whatever. Rav Chiya is talking about in the Braisa a case where we know for a fact that it is Dam Nida. For example, Rashi says that, let's say she was a Nida, She was already a ninja, let's say, and she wiped herself with this cloth. So now we know for a fact that the blood on it is dam ninja. It's definitely metame the cloth. Dam ninja vade, mother all of Zion, someone, and mavakloi. So Rav Chiya says in the Braisa, you can still use the seven chemicals on it and be mavakloi. And that means even if the seven chemicals do not cause the blood to go away, we still say it's bottle, because at that point you're not masked on it anymore. Actually, we're going to be discussing further on the onward. We're going to be discussing this concept not to be machshor like it is already makabel truma. A cloth doesn't need hechshor makabel truma. Only food needs hechshor makabel truma by being wet. A lot of times in hechshor truma v'tara we say that kavana is an important thing. Here, what we're talking about is your kavana could be to be mevatel that blood, and therefore to make it that now it's not going to be metame the beged anymore. So like this, once you use the seven chemicals on it, Rebchiya is saying in the Braisa, then you mevatel it. Now the question is, how is being mevatel it help? What do you mean? It's damnida. How is your being mevatel it help? The fact of the matter is, objectively, it is damnida. And again, in this case, unlike the Mishnah, we know for a fact that it's damnida. Yeah, in the Mishnah, right, exactly. In the Mishnah, you could say after all, for stuff, it's fine, because you don't know whether it came from a nida. Here, you know for sure that it is. And yet, Alma Kepeda Talia Milsa. So we see from that it depends to a certain extent on Kepeda. So therefore, if the person is makbid, that he doesn't want the blood to be on the garment, then as long as it's there, it is mekameh. But once he used the Zayin Sammanim, even if it didn't go completely away, Rashi describes it still, because it's blood, the seven chemicals will cause it to lessen in intensity. It won't look as bright red as it did before, or whatever color it was before.
Before
it was considered vaday dam nida, because Rashi said, call it whatever you want. I mean, the point is that, in other words, she was a nida, and then she wiped with it. So we know for a fact that it is blood from her. And nevertheless, though, the seven sammanim are enough to make it to reduce the color, and therefore that's enough to make it tahor, is what Rebchiya is telling us. Hachinami, the same thing over here. In the case of the previous braisa, where we talked about where you use the seven chemicals twice, the kepeda talia milsa. We see that on the other hand, therefore, that kepeda can make a difference. So therefore, again, he did it the first time, and it didn't go away. At that point, he could have considered that it's seva, it's die, and there's nothing further to worry about. But he chose to not consider that enough. He chose to do all the seven chemicals again, and this time it did reduce the color. So therefore, that's the difference between after the first time versus after the second time. That is how we can make it that after the first time, the tyrus will be tahor, but after the second time, the tyrus will be tahor. Because we see he's makbid, and we see from Rashi's Braisa that being makbid makes the difference. Tosfos points out, in that case, then why do you need to summon him at all? Just be mevatelit, just be mentally mevatelit, and that's that. Tosfos says, because in that case, if you don't use the Shiva Sammanim to at least try to reduce the intensity of the stain or remove it altogether, then your bittul doesn't really have an effect. We would say Bafla Daita Esa Kolada. Most people would object to having a blood stain on clothing where they're able to remove it using the Shiva, or at least reduce it using the Shiva Sammanim.
But then you could say, why do you just stop bringing the seven ones? You could have any chemical, basically.
If you use saffron, like we said before, then that will remove blood. It'll also remove dye. Fine. If you want to use saffron instead, fine.
Use hydrogen peroxide.
Okay, same difference. The point is, in other words, you know, fine. But the point is,
you're saying that the kavana is what counts.
Yeah. But on the other hand, no, because Tosfos did make the distinction on Amud Aleph. The fact is, it has to be that afterwards we see that his kavana had an effect, namely that the Shiva Sammanim did what they do to blood and don't do to dye. So maybe it wouldn't work to use saffron or hydrogen peroxide or what have you, because those remove dye as well. No, but the point is, in other words, let's say he used saffron, or let's say he used hydrogen peroxide or what have you, and it removes dye as well. That maybe would not necessarily, based on what the Gemara is saying over here, that wouldn't necessarily be enough to say, okay, but he was makbid, therefore it should have an effect. And the fact of the matter is, it may have been dye all along, and the fact that he's makbid on dye is neither here nor there. No, because the fact is, it is blood of nida, which is metamor.
Exactly.
Right. So therefore, so
it doesn't matter really which blood it is.
No, but it matters. If it's damn nida, it's metamor. If it's just blood from a nosebleed or whatever, it's not metamor.
No, I understand that, but why do we say that if he has the kavana when it's damn nida bavadai, only the seven chemicals work and not any other chemical?
Because like Tosfos is saying on Amud Aleph, it's not just enough that there's kepeda, there has to be both. There has to be kepeda and that the result of it actually shows us that all along it is something that was mechanical. So if he uses some other chemical which can remove dye as well, then you have kepeda, but you don't have a demonstration that it was, after all, something that was metamor. Okay, actually, in Rebchiya's case, maybe not, because you're right. In the case of Rebchiya's braisa, since it was dam nidavada, maybe it's different. Maybe. Okay. Maybe. That's a good point. Okay. Fine. All right. So the Gemara starts a related discussion, a discussion related to this topic of when you have tumah, when you have tuba absorbed into something where afterwards it is possible to get it out, when is it metame and when is it not? So, Tznan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim, Charosin Shinishtamash Bahen Zav. If you have earthenware Kalim that a Zav used, the Rashi describes, we're talking about, let's say, for example, an earthenware pot that's used at a zover or what have you, used as a chamber pot. So, for example, the urinating kit.
Right.
So these are earthenware containers that have absorbed klicheres, that have absorbed liquids from a zov that are an avatruma. We know, we've learned before, that there are certain liquids from a zov which are an avatruma on a daraita level. Among them are the actual zov or shiklat zera of his, also his urine, also a couple of others. And then you have other liquids from his body or other liquids that he touches that are not an avatruma, they're only a rishon truma. For example, just any liquid that he touches, or for example, his tears, or a couple of other things. So charosin shenishtamish behen zav shabalu mashkin. So they absorbed liquid because the nature of things is if it was let's say a china container or whatever, it wouldn't really absorb that much.
Right.
But because it's unglazed earthenware, so therefore it tends to absorb a lot. So it absorbed liquid. It absorbed urine from him. The naflu la'avaratanur. Now that earthenware pot fell into an oven. It fell into the airspace of an oven, of an earthenware oven, and we know that an earthenware oven is able to be metame from the inside. But at this point, thank you. At this point, you don't yet have that. At this point, you don't yet have that. Now the mashkin, the liquids that are embedded in this earthenware are not actually present over there. I mean, they're not, you know, they're absorbed into the earthenware. They're not recognizable.
Right.
This is an example of tuma blua. So we learned back in Chulin about the whole concept of tuma blua. When you have tuma that's absorbed into something else, there we had an example, let's say a person swallowed something that's tummy. Actually, the Rashi over here in our sugya explains that over here it's based on the same principle. So according to Rashi, it doesn't matter whether the object that contains the tumor within it is a living person or an animal, which is what we talk about in Cholin, or whether it's an inanimate object, like we're talking about over here about earthenware. But Rashi apparently learns over here that there's no difference between them. You have other Rishonim, I think the Rambam, for example, learn that not necessarily what we would say is there's a tumor, the real concept of tumor blua applies only if it's a living creature that swallowed it, a person, a dog, or what have you, as opposed to over here. The reason we'd be talking about it's not so much because of tumor blua, it's more because of bottle. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the point is, Vahusakatano, continues the Mishnah, suppose now you fired up the oven. When you fire up the oven, the heat causes the liquid that was absorbed into the earthenware to exude. To come out. Therefore, Hatanur Tomei. Therefore, the oven is Tomei as soon as you fired it. Shasoif Mashkalotis, because eventually this liquid that was absorbed into the Klicheres, the urine from the Zav that was absorbed into the Klicheres, is eventually going to start coming out. So therefore, even...
It's in the walls is not enough. It has to come out of the walls.
In order to be Metame, the oven has to... Well, that's what we're going to be discussing in the Sugi over here. But in so far...
Say simply with us, whether or not it comes out, it's Tomei.
No, because that's what we're saying. Tuma Blua. Tuma blua, that's what we're saying. But we're actually going to be discussing that. But so far, what we're saying is because it's tuma blua, it wouldn't be metame the oven yet. However, once the oven is fired up, then it's not considered tuma blua anymore because it's going to come out. So Amar Rish Lakish, so now on that Mishnah, Rish Lakish says, Loishonu ela mashkin kalim. So Rish Lakish says there's actually a distinction over here. It depends what kind of liquid was originally absorbed into the original earthenware container that fell into the oven. Was it mashkin kalim? Was it liquids that only have a lighter degree of truma? For example, let's say there's Zav tears or blood from a wound or whatever, where such things are not an avatruma. Such things are not an avatruma, and on a daraisa level, therefore, they're not able to be metame kalim. On a daraisa level, they can only be metame other foods or drinks. Mm-hmm. So those are called mashkin kalim. So those, says Rish Lakish, the oven is not going to be tame until you fire it up. Avo mashkin chamurin, but continues Rish Lakish, suppose that the pot had absorbed mashkin chamurin, for example, the urine of a zav, which is an avatuma, and on a deraisa level, those are able to be metamic him. Tomei avo pishalei hosa katanu. Then Rish Lakish says the oven is going to be tomei even before you fired it up. I it's tuma blua, just because it's in the walls of the container that fell into the oven. Exactly. So Rish Lakish is going to say this whole concept of tuma blua only applies to things that are a rish in the tuma, but not things that are an ava. To mashkin kalim, but not mashkin chamorin.
Such as what, for instance?
That's what we said. Mashkin kalim would be an example. Examples of that would be, Rashi says, for example, the tears of a zav, or let's say you have a person who's tummy meh. Saliva, no, we said, is an ava tuma. But another example Rashi says is, let's say you have a person who's tummy mess, his urine. Only the urine, that we learned earlier in Masechta, that only a zav v'chaveira, which means the four people in the category of a zav, zav, zava, nida, and yeledes, plus also we learned before, metzora and metzeraas are also in this category. They are the ones who certain body secretions of theirs, such as their urine, are an avatoman at their eyes level. All other tmeim, for example, if you have a person who's a tamei mes, the person who's a tamei mes is a very severe degree of tumah, but the urine is still only a rish in the tumah like anybody else's. I shouldn't say like anybody else's. I mean, a regular person's urine wouldn't be tamei at all, but in other words, a tamei mes, fine. He's an avatumah, his urine touches him, therefore it's a rish in the tumah, but no more than that. That's mashkin kalim. So Rish Lakish is telling us that there's a difference whether this chamber pot was used for mashkin kalim versus mashkin chamurin. If it was mashkin kalim, then the oven remains tahor until you fire it up, which now is going to eventually cause the liquid to start exuding out of it. As opposed to if it's mashkin chamurin, then we don't apply this whole concept of tumah blua. We say that we don't even need the heat. Just the fact that it fell into the oven is enough to be the time of the oven.
Is that the halacha?
No, Rabbi Yechanan Amar. Rabbi Yechanan says, and you know, usually when Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan argue, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yechanan. Echad mashkin kalim ve'echad mashkin chamorim. Doesn't matter whether it's mashkin kalim or whether it's mashkin chamorim. Either way, the same din, as the Mishnah says. Im posa katanu ein iloy loy. If the oven is fired up and then the liquid is going to start exuding out, then it's metame the oven. If not, then not. It'll be a difference whether it's metame d'arais or d'rabanan. If it's mashkin chamorim, it'll be metame the oven on a daraisa level because mashkin chamurin are able to be metame kalim. If it's mashkin kalim, they're only metame the oven on the rabbanan level. But either way, Rabbi Yechanan says the oven has to be fired up for that to happen. So the Gemara says, "Eisvei Rabbi Yechanan l'Rish Lakish." So Rabbi Yechanan asks on Rish Lakish, "What are you telling me that if it was mashkin chamurim, then you don't even need to fire up the oven? What about we said in the Braisa, we just quoted hit biloy va'asa agav of actually in the Mishnah." It below the also agav of taris. We said, suppose you have a cloth which has a stain on it, and you're not sure whether it was dam nida or not. Again, we're talking about our Mishnah where it was a kesem. So you toveled it, and then you used it for taris. The hever all of zayin sammonim. Then you use the seven chemicals on it. The loy ovar and the blood or whatever constituted the stain did not come out. Hareza tseva. Then we assume that it is dye. The taris of taharis and then the taris that he used it for are tahor. The ain sarich lahafil. And he doesn't need to tovel it again. So the question is, after all, isn't there the possibility that maybe after all it was blood? Again, I mentioned before that you have Rishonim who learn in our whole sugya over here that when we say that if you use the Zayin Sammonim and it didn't come out, the likelihood is that it's Seva, the likelihood is that it's dye, but there's still the slight possibility that it is blood. So if we say that Rabbi Yechanan is asking like this. If we say that when you have, so now what we have over here is called balua she'edi yocholotis el-al-yed chak. You have something which is absorbed, a source of tumor, or a potential source of tumor, which is absorbed in such a way that it's not easy to get it out. To get it out of whatever it's absorbed into is going to take a good deal of effort. So if you say that's tahor, which is what I'm saying, because I'm saying that even, for example, you had the urine of a zav absorbed into the walls of a chamber pot that fell into the oven, and I'm saying that the only thing that's going to get that out is heat, to only when the oven is fired up is it going to be Tomei. If you take that view, then okay, then it explains why in our Mishnah we're saying that the Taharas remain Tahar. We therefore we have the right to assume that the stuff that the stain on the clothing is dye. Because after all, even if it was blood, because it's so deeply absorbed that even the Sammanim are not getting it out, then therefore you can consider it Tahar. But you, the Shlokish, are saying that because you're able to get them out, for example, by firing up the oven, since they're mashkin chamurim, they're metame, even before you actually fire it up, well, by the same logic, in this case, we should say that maybe after all it was blood. You use the shiva sammanim, doesn't matter. Maybe after all it is blood. Or after all, we said before, you could always use saffron on it, and that would get it out, even if it was a really stubborn stain. So how can we assume that it remains tahar and your taharas are tame when after all there is a possibility that it is blood? And according to you, if it's mashkin chamurim, as blood of a nida is, then it doesn't even matter whether it can come out right now. Just the fact that you're able at some future point to get it out, for example, by heat, mashkin blood from a nida is mashkin chamurim. Sure. So Rish Lakish answers him, Hanachu Ksamim Drabanan. You know what, though? Set aside the whole point of Ksamim. And the whole point, the whole concept of Kesim, as we've said a number of times, is only Drabanan. So therefore, fine, we can be makel in this case. When you have, for example, like in the case of Rav Chiya that we just quoted, which actually Rav Yechim is going to quote that next. In the case of Rav Chiya's Braita, where we said it's blood that definitely came from a nida, No. In the Mishnah and Kalim, where the chamber pot was definitely used for the urine of a zav, or in the case of Rav Chiya's Braita, where the cloth was used to wipe by a nida to wipe herself, that would be one thing. But in the case of the Mishnah, when the whole thing is only a kesem, it's only a stain, where you don't know for a fact that it came from her. So you have to use the shiva sammanim on it because if you're able to check it out, and after all, Tosfos points out usually a kesem does come from her. So therefore, you do have to try to see. But once you see that you tried the seven chemicals and it didn't come out, at that point you have the right to assume that it is dye because the whole thing is only drabanan, which is not the case, for example, with the urine from a zav, where you know for a fact it's urine from a zav. Okay, what about V'hatani Rav Chiya, continues Rav Yechanan to Rish Lakish. What about the braisa that we quoted before from Rav Chiya? Dama nida badai maver al zayin sammanim uvatloi. That even if you have blood that definitely came from a nida, then you can still use the seven chemicals on it and be mevatloi. And in other words, even if those didn't cause the blood to come out completely, they only weaken the color, then that's enough. And at that point, it's bottle. According to you, why should that be so? It's mashkin chamurim. You're able to get it out by using the shiva sammanin multiple times, or by using saffron or what have you. So therefore, according to you, it should be metame, even after you use the shiva sammanin. The answer is, Amalei, so Rish Lakish says, I can't accept that braisa is correct. He says, Rashi actually adds the words in the Gemara over here, Zu Eina Mishnah. This can't possibly be a correct braisa. Because Rebbe, like, this is a famous expression, they have in a number of places in Shas, Rebbe lo shana Rav Chiya minolei. If Rebbe didn't teach this concept in the Mishnah, then where would Rav Chiya know it from? Rav Chiya, after all, is Rebbe Talmud. Anything that Rav Chiya knew in Torah has to come from his Rebbe. Well, so that's the point. So the point is, now Tosfos says, we have all over Shas, we always ask things from Braisis, and we don't usually use this thing that the Tosfos says. The difference is, usually when the Gemara asks a question from a Braisa, you have a couple of places, you have a story that the Gemara tells in a couple of places, in Tainis and in Ksubas, one punchline of the story is that anything that you find in a braisa, generally speaking, anything that you find spelled out in a braisa can be shown to be implicit someplace in a Mishnah. you have a story over there in Tainis and more briefly in Ksubas about Ilfa, one of a chaver of Rabbi Yechanan, that he and Rabbi Yechanan left the yeshiva to engage in business. Akitzer, Rabbi Yechanan ended up returning to the yeshiva and ended up getting appointed Rosh Yeshiva. And then Ilfa wanted to show that he also knows his way around Torah as much as Rabbi Yechanan does. So he says, so he issues a challenge that anybody bring me a braisa, and I will show you how what it says in this braisa can be inferred from something in a Mishnah. So usually that's how it is. And he did. Somebody brought him an example of a certain halacha in a braisa, and Ilfa was able to show that it's hinted at in a Mishnah in Ksuvos. So the point is, in other words, you have this concept that in general what's spelled out in a braisa is implicit in a Mishnah. Over here, Rish Lakish is arguing that it seems obvious that what it says in this braisa is not hinted at anywhere in the Mishnah. In fact, actually, in a way, it seems to not necessarily, but Rish Lakish is saying, I know for a fact. Tosfos says, have a pshitalei, Rish Lakish delota miza b'masnitzim. That Rish Lakish considered it an obvious thing that there's no hint to this concept anywhere in a Mishnah. Also, Tosfos says the very fact that the Mishnah tells us this din only about a kesem implies that it doesn't work by dam nida. So how could we have a braisa where Rav Chiya is saying that it does apply to dam nida vaday as well? So it must be that there's something wrong with this braisa. One of the achronim, the Radal, points out another way of looking at it also. Usually when we quote a braisa and we ask on it from Amoroyim or whatever, it's usually fine. It can be a braisa from Rav Chiya's yeshiva, but usually that means, in other words, Rav Chiya is not telling us his own opinion. He's telling us the opinion of Tanoim who preceded him, which he took their words and put them in a braisa. Here the expression in the braisa is Rav Chiya Oimer. Rav Chiya says such and such, implying that it's his own opinion. Where would he get his own independent opinion from? That doesn't exist anywhere in the Mishnayos. No, that doesn't exist anywhere in Mishnayos.
Before Ilfa?
Ilfa was an Amora. He's pointing out this concept that in general, whatever it says in a Braisa is implicit in the Mishnah. But over here, Rish Lakish is saying that that's all fine and good when you have a Braisa that Rabbi Chiya taught, which represents the opinion of Tanoim earlier than him. You can find it implied somewhere in the Mishnah. But here it's being presented as Rav Chiya's own opinion. So where does Rav Chiya's own opinion come from if we don't have a Rebbe? If Rebbe never said such a thing. So therefore, Rish Lakish says, I can't accept that braisa is correct. There must be something wrong with it, and therefore I would say that this concept applies, that you can use the seventh sammonim only applies to something that is a kesem, that's a suffix, but not dam nidavada.
Because all the other people accept it, and is there anyone who doesn't?
Okay, he's entitled to say that he doesn't accept this to be a valid braisa.
Yeah, he knows.
I don't know. He knows. I mean, Rabbi Yochanan obviously accepted it as a valid braisa. But yeah. Okay, onward. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan says, I have another objection to you, Rish Lakish. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Aleph, Revius Dam Shenivla Babayis, if you have a revius of blood that was from a mess, which is Metameh Ba'oil, that was absorbed into a house, Habayis Tomei, then the house, meaning not the house itself, but meaning everything that was in the house is Tomei, because it was all under an oil with a revius of blood from a mess.
No,
it got absorbed into the floor, let's say.
Oh.
Whatever. V'amri lo habayis tahor. There's a different version of the Mishnah that actually says that the house, meaning the contents of the house, are tahor. So how do we reconcile those two versions? V'loitli, so the two versions are not actually arguing. One is talking about kalim that were in the house before the revius of blood was brought in there. So what happened? Or spilled in there, whatever. So therefore you have, at the moment that the revius of blood was spilled, before it got absorbed into the floor, at that point all the revius was together.
Blood.
Yeah, human blood, obviously, we're talking about. From a mess, specifically. It wouldn't apply to blood that, well, it wouldn't apply to animal blood. It wouldn't apply to blood that came from a living person, either. A person had a nosebleed, let's say, and a revius of blood came out, nothing happened. We're talking about a revius of blood from a mess. If you had that kalim were in the house, and then the revius of blood was spilled in the house, those kalim are tamei, because for a moment over there, they were under the same oil as this revius. As opposed to once the revius is spilled in the house and it starts soaking into the ground, then any kalim that are brought into the house after that remain tahor, because they were never under an oil at the same time as a full revius.
So the floor is made of marble.
Well, then obviously it's not getting absorbed. Then there's nothing to talk about.
There has to be
something that would absorb blood. Right. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. It's actually the next Mishnah, whatever. Nivla obiksus. Suppose that. So okay. So that part of the Mishnah is not really so relevant to the discussion over here. But the point is, the next Mishnah says nivla obiksus. Suppose you have this revius of blood instead of soaking into the floor of a house. Suppose that it's soaked into a piece of clothing. So the question is, do we say that you have a problem with Trumas Oyo or not? So it depends. In Miskabeses, the Yotam Men Revius Dam, if when you wash the clothing, you're able to get out a revius or more of blood out of it, then Tomei, the Tneya, then it is Tomei. Vimlav Tahora, and if not, then it will be Tomei.
If you wash it,
and in the course of washing it, at least the revius of blood comes out, then the cloth will be Tomei. If not, then it's Tahor. Because why is it Tahor? Because again, because you have whatever blood is. Let's say you had a revius of blood spilled on it to begin with, but you wash it and less than a revius comes out. Whatever is left is Balua She'ena Yotze Elai De'Achak. Again, the only way to get it out would be with some strong chemical like saffron or something. And according to Rish Lakish's logic, it should still combine together with the rest in Mimatame. So what are you telling me, Tahora? How, by the way, Rashi and Tosfos discussed over here, how would you know whether you got out a revius of blood or not? I mean, after all, you wash it, you have blood mixed in with water. So Rashi describes what you do is Rashi elsewhere in Bava Kamma, because this comes up in Bava Kamma as well. Rashi describes what you do is you take a certain measured amount of water, then you use that to wash the clothing. Afterwards, you remeasure the water and see whether it's at least a revius more. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. No, in other words, so yeah, you start off, let's say, with exactly a gallon of water. Afterwards, you measure the water, and you find a gallon plus a revius. So then it means that there's a revius of blood in it. Tosfos doesn't like that, though, because, for example, you could still have, I mean, after all, the cloth absorbs some water as well. So like this, you have some water is still absorbed, some blood is still absorbed. So Tosfos learns a little differently. Tosfos brings from a braisa, from Tosefta and all this, what you do is, you start with a certain measured amount of water. You wash the cloth in it. Fine. So let's say you take exactly a gallon of water and wash the cloth in it. Then you take another exact gallon of water, pour a revius of blood into it, and compare the colors of the two containers of water. If they're the same color, or the one that you use to wash is a deeper color, then you know that there's more. You start with a gallon of water in one container. And you use that to wash the stained cloth. Then you take a separate container, put another gallon, put exactly a gallon in there, pour in a revius of blood, and compare the color of the liquids in the two containers. Okay, then Tosfos says that's how you do it. Okay, anyway, the point is that the point is we say that if you can't get a revius of blood out of the cloth, in other words, so again, according to either Rashi or Tosfos' explanation, you don't have a revius of blood that came out, then it's tahor. Now, why should it be tahor? Again, according to Rish Lakish, blood from a mess is, after all, mashkin chamurin, because it's an avat troma d'araisa, avat troma, in fact, whatever. And therefore, as long as there is some way of getting it out, and in this case there would, because you could use saffron on it and get it out, or you could use the seven sun money repeatedly and get it out. According to the Shlokish's logic, it should be Matami even now, and yet the Mishnah is telling us it's not. The answer is
the logic of Rish Lakish
is because it's mashkin chamurin, and we don't care that right now it's not coming out, as long as there's a way to get it out. For example, by firing up the oven, or for example, by using saffron or whatever, then it's already metame. So now, according to this, why should it be? The answer is, Amar Rav Kahana mikuli revius shanu kan. So Rav Kahana answers, we're actually talking about over here about a din that one of the leniencies that applies to a revius of blood. Why? Why would there be a leniency? Because shiny dam tivusa derabanan. Because we're not talking about where the entire revius came from a mess. We're talking about the revius of blood to begin with was dam tvusa. Dam Tvusa, we're actually going to learn about it in the next parak, refers to you have blood that started coming out of a person while he was alive and then continued dripping out after he died. So you have, let's say, for example, Horug, it says over there, let's say for you have somebody, for example, who was stabbed with a sword and is dying, and you have some blood is coming out of him while he's still alive, and more is coming out after he dies, and you have a stuff that's how much came out while he was alive, which is not metame, how much came out after he's dead, which is metame. So therefore, the whole concept of that entire revius is metame is only the Rabbanon. Nu, Rish Lakish already said that when it comes to things the Rabbanon, you can be made. But in other words, Rish Lakish would say that, yes, if we were talking about a revius of blood where definitely the entire thing came out of a mess, then yes, absolutely it would be metame even if you can't get a complete revius out of the cloth. Okay. Now Rish Lakish says, okay, now I have a contradiction for you, Rav Yechanan. You are saying that even Mashkin Chamurim, as long as you haven't actually started the process of getting them out, then they're not metame yet. Like, for example, by fire, until you fire up the oven, they're not metame. But we learn in that same Mishnah, Kol HaBalua She'eni Yocholotis, anytime you have a liquid which is metame, which cannot come out at all, then it's not metame anything anymore, implying how yochol losis tame, implying if you are able to get it out, no matter whether right now, potential, as long as you have the potential of getting it out. For example, blood by tzapper, you know, for example, urine of a zav by firing up the oven, yeah. But apagab blenofik, even if it hasn't come out yet. So what are you, Rabbi Yechanan, telling us that only once you started the process of getting it out, then it's going to be metame? We see from the implication of the Mishnah that even before that, it's able to be metame. Amar Papa. So the Papa says, okay, you're right. We have to clarify the situation. Kol heicha de'en yocholotis. When you have a liquid which is not able to come out under the current circumstances, the loy hikpidolov, and you're also not makbid, you don't care whether it stays in there or not, divrei hakol tahor, everybody, both Rish Lakish and Rav Yechanan, will agree that it's tahor. On the other hand, if it's the opposite, yocholot is the hikvid olav, if you are able to get it out relatively easily, and you are makbid, you want to get it out, for example, blood that's absorbed in the cloth, you don't want it to stay in there, you want, as in the example we had before, you use the seven sammonim, or you use saplin on it, or that you use the seven sammonim a second time, or you use saplin or what have you, so you show that you don't want it to remain absorbed in the cloth, divrei hakol tomei, then everybody, even Rabbi Yechanan, will agree that it's still metame, because you are able to get it out, and you're makbid, and you want to get it out. Pligi, the whole machlokas, Rav Yechanan and Rish Lakish, will be the yocholotis v'lehikvidolam. You are able to get it out, but you're not particularly makbid to try to get it out. So, marsavar, so, Rish Lakish will hold kivin the yocholotis because you're able to get it out, afagab v'lehikvidolam, even if you're not makbid, nevertheless, it's still metame. Now, what happens, returning to our original case that Rav Yechanan and Rish Lakish were arguing about this chamber pot that was used for urine of a zav, and was saying it fell into an oven. So what happens? You are able to get out the urine that was absorbed in it by firing up the oven, and therefore the heat will cause it to absorb. But you're not makbid. Yeah, it's a chamber pot. Why would you care to get it out? That's not the point. That's fine. The point is you're not makbid to try to get everything out possible. So therefore, the Rish Lakish is going to say that nevertheless, the fact that you're able to get it out is enough to be metame. Umar Sova, whereas Rabbi Yechanan is going to hold Kepeda is an important thing. Afagav the Yochalot, even if you're able to get it out by firing up the oven, im hikbid olav ein, if you're makbid to try to get it all out, then yes, it's metame. Eloi, loy, and if not, then not. So therefore, the Mishnah that Rish Lakish is bringing to Rabbi Yechanan, where we say any Yochalot is Tahor, implying Yochalot is Tame, Rabbi Yechanan would explain when do we say the implication in Yochalotz's Tomei would only be, it would also have to be that he's mastered. It's not enough that it's able to come out, it would also have to be that he's mastered. Okay. The mission doesn't say that, but the mission didn't say explicitly that Yochalotz's Tomei anyway. All it said is Eini Yochalotz's Tomei. So Rabbi Yechanan So Rabbi Yechanan would say Eini Yochalotz's is always Tomei. Yochalotis, it depends whether you're makbid or not. So therefore, he would say that's
why. Where did he get that from?
Because we said before, we
not in Mishnah.
No, well, we did bring before the Braisa of Reb Chiya. Fine, the Shlokish argued and said there must be something wrong with that Braisa,
yeah.
But Reb Yochanan doesn't have to accept that. Besides which, also, we had the previous Braisa on Tzamach Beis Amud Aleph, where we brought the Braisa about the person used the Shiva Samanim twice. And Reb Zera drew the distinction over there between after the first time versus after the second time. So we see from all that there is a concept of Kedah being an important factor. Yeah. Okay. So that's that. So that's that. So if you can't get it out, then if you can't get it out at all, then it's always going to be Tahor. If you could get it out, then it depends whether if you could get it out, it depends.
If you can't get it out, then it's always going to be.
If you can't get it out, it's always going to be.
It's going to be Tahor.
If you can't get it out,
it's
always going
to
be tough.
And if you could get
it out, then it depends. Yeah. Then it according to Rabbi Yochanan, which is the halacha, it depends whether you're maskid. Right? Fine. Okay. So the halacha is that you have to be maskid and you have to be able to get it out. Right? Okay. Fine. The Mishnah said, Ezehu roik tofel. So we mentioned among the seven, the first one of the seven chemicals we said was roik tofel, which literally means tasteless. So what does that mean? So we said briefly in the Mishnah. What it said. It said kolshalai tam klum. It said that he didn't taste anything. But it didn't explain how long has he not tasted anything. So tana, we learn in a brisa. It means kolshalai tam klum mi ba'erev. It means that he hadn't tasted anything from the evening. Now what do we mean? Which evening? So the papa, when he was a Talmud sitting in front of Rava, he thought to explain, Kimanda Omer, it's like when people say the expression, like Tom Midi Ba'urta. This person has not eaten anything since Urta means the night. So it means, in other words, so what it would mean, in other words, Rishlok, papa thought to say that what it means is, let's say, for example, we want to use the saliva of his, let's say, on Wednesday morning. It would have to be that he hasn't eaten, not only that he didn't eat Tuesday night, but he hasn't eaten since Monday night. That's what Rabbi Papa thought.
Wednesday morning?
Let's say we want to use it Wednesday morning. When he wakes up, we would have to have that he's been fasting since Monday night. That's what Rabbi Papa thought, that's what the Braisa means.
No, that's
more like Rava. So Rava says, Mi katani ba'erev. It doesn't say he didn't eat in the evening. Mi ba'erev katani. From the evening, implying yesterday he ate normally. In other words, all what we're trying to say is that it's not roik tofel if he woke up early in the morning. No, I think I said it wrong. Rapapa thought that it meant that he hadn't eaten, let's say, Tuesday night. And then Wednesday morning, we want to use his roik tofel. Rava is saying there's no problem if he ate Tuesday night. What we mean is there would be a problem if, let's say, he woke up early Wednesday morning and before Alois Shachar, let's say, and ate something. Then it's not roik tofel. But if he ate something Tuesday night, then that's fine. And then went to sleep, then that would be fine. Okay. Amar Rava Baba
would be interrupted only in the morning.
Right. Amar Rava Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Ezehu roik tofel. So Rava Baba Chana, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, give the definition of roik tofel. Kol she'ovu olav chatzois laila uvashena. It has to be that chatzos laila, that midnight passed, and he was sleeping. So the question, yeah.
Sleeping or fasting?
Yeah, well, we had to be fasting as well. We said he could eat at night, but we said he also has to be sleeping. You actually have there are slightly different explanations among the Mefarshim over here. Do we mean that he's sleeping from the beginning of the night at least until midnight and only wakes up after midnight, or does it mean that's how Rashi seems to understand it over here, or the Rambam understands it the other way around that he went to sleep no later than midnight and slept until the morning?
I mean, what about if you both tikkun chatzes?
Well, then it wouldn't be roik tofel. But they're going to say there's also speaking factors in jade as well, right? So the question is, remember the Mishena Talia Milsa? You're telling me it depends whether he was asleep at chatzos, again, from the beginning of the night till chatzos, or from chatzos until the end of the night? It's a braisa. Yoshin kolayom, we learn in a braisa that if the person slept the entire day, aims a roik tofel, when he wakes up, his saliva is not considered roik tofel. It doesn't have that power to be able to be a stain remover.
When he wakes up the next.
Even less than that. In other words, let's say a person goes to sleep at 6 or 7 in the morning and sleeps straight through until the night and then wakes up at the beginning of the night. That wouldn't be roik tofel, even though he's been sleeping for 12 hours straight.
From the night to the morning.
Right. From the morning to the night. On the other hand, neo kola laila, but if he was up all night, hareza roik tofel. It can still be considered roik tofel. So you're telling me he has to be asleep at chatzos from the beginning of the night until chatzos, or from chatzos till the end of the night, as the case may be. But we see from the braisa that he could be awake the entire night and still in the morning his saliva is called roik tofel. The answer is hosim b'misnam. The answer is when the braisa says that he's awake all night, doesn't mean he's fully awake. It means he's drowsing all night. So if he's drowsing all night, that's fine. It's still considered enough sleep that its saliva will still have that bitterness and that potency to be David HaMelech actually woke up, actually fully woke up every half hour to learn. And then he stayed up from Chatzos onward and learned the rest of the night. But even before that, he would sleep less than half an hour at a time. But yeah, so no, that wouldn't be. So the Gemara continues, what exactly is this definition of misnamnim, a person who is drowsing? Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says, it comes up in a few areas, it comes up in a few places in the Gemara, nim v'loy nim tir v'loy tir. It means he's asleep, but not fully asleep. He's awake, but he's not fully awake. So what does that mean? Dekoru le'va'oni. He's at a point where if you call his name, he will answer. V'loyodil aduri svara. When it comes to if you ask him something that requires some thought, he won't be able to answer it. But he's not quite so deeply asleep. He's at the point where if you remind him of something, he will remember it. So that one of the places this comes up is at the end of Sochim, because it talks about over there, that let's say you have people who are eating the Korban Pesach. If they're drowsing, they haven't fully fallen asleep, then when they fully wake up, they're allowed to continue eating the Korban Pesach as opposed to if they fell completely asleep. So the Rashbam there gives an example. Let's say, for example, this person is half asleep. Suppose you ask him, where'd you put such and such? He won't be able to answer because he's not all there to be able to think where he put it. But if they ask him, did you put it in such and such a place, he'll be able to say yes or no. Because that amount of that he can do. So that would be an example of somebody who's drowsing. So again, if a person is drowsy like that all night, then still his saliva can be considered roik tofel in the morning. Tana, we learned the braisa, another definition. Hishkin b'shona pirkei, suppose the person gets up first thing in the morning and starts learning his section, his portion of Torah, his daily shurim for that day, ain't the roik tofel, then it's not roik tofel because speaking also reduces the potency of his saliva. The ad kama, up to what point do we say that even saying one word makes it roik tofel? No, Amar of Yehuda bar Shiva, Amar of Ashi, Amar of Elazar, Kol sheyasa roiv diburei shal shalosh shoyz. Only if he spoke most of the amount of speaking that he speaks in the first 3 hours of the day. In other words, you have a person usually has a rough idea how much they tend to speak during the first 3 hours of the day. Once a person has spoken most of that amount of speaking, and it could be condensed, it doesn't necessarily have to be a full hour and a half. It could be, let's say, that that particular morning, the person wakes up and talks during the first hour of the day more than usual or whatever. That would be enough to make it not roik tofel. Davening the pashtus would be considered speaking. The Rambam has a slightly different explanation of this, apparently based on... What?
Davening is not speaking.
Of course it is. Davening involves speaking. You're speaking the words. Yeah.
It's not speaking.
What do you mean it's not speaking? It's saying words, isn't it?
Well, you mumble sometimes.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. People mumble, but nevertheless, it's still speaking. It's still moving his lips, and it's still causing, therefore, that the saliva is not quite as, Okay. The Rambam has a slightly different explanation, and possibly based on a slightly different girsa, that in general, speaking before 3 hours of the day tends to weaken his saliva and make it more water-like. Okay. Anyway, the bottom line is, so we have all these definitions are all factor into it. So it would have to be the person didn't eat anything from the beginning of the night. He was sleeping at Chatzos. Again, you have the different explanations, whether it means he was sleeping from the beginning of the night until after Chatzos, or that Amnon learns from before Chatzos until the end of the night. And the next morning, he doesn't eat, and he doesn't do too much speaking. Okay. And then it's within the first 3 hours of the day. Then we said that so then that saliva has this potency that you can use it as the first ingredient. Okay. We said the next one in the Mishnah, we said may grisin. The second one was water of split beans or split peas or whatever, the second chemical. We said le'isas grisin shall pull. Behold, the Mishnah had said it refers to chewed split peas. So what what does that mean? Bifascious, it means that you take the split peas and you chew them and mix them with saliva. So the Gemara says, "Lema Messiah Lele Rishlakish." Can we say therefore that our Mishnah supports Rishlakish's explanation? The Amr Rishlakish, Roik Tofel Tzarach Shiyehem Kol Echad Ve'Echad. Rishlakish says these seven chemicals that we say in the Mishnah, each one of them has to be combined together with Roik Tofel. In other words, so we had in the Mishnah, Roik Tofel by itself was the first ingredient, but we had Mei Grisin was the second one, Mei Raglayim, urine was the third one, etc. Rish Lakish learns that each one of these, when you're applying it to the stain and rubbing it, has to first be mixed with Roik Tofel. On the face of it, when the Mishnah mentions that the split pea, well, just Rish Lakish is saying this, but the point is that on the face of it, therefore, when the Mishnah mentions that you have to take the beans and chew them, the pashtus, what we mean is, who has to be chewing them? Not just stam anybody, somebody who's producing roig tofel, according to the definition that we just had. The answer is, the Gemara says, not necessarily. Dilma hevla de puma mali. Maybe all it is you need the heat and the moisture of the mouth, and it goes together with and helps give the may grist in its potency. But it doesn't necessarily in and of itself need to be roig tofel, and in addition with the other chemicals, not necessarily do you need to use roig tofel with them at all.
Roig tofel doesn't have any other application than trying to wipe out some
blood. Yeah, pretty much. I don't,
that's what it is?
Yeah, that's what it is. I don't think we have any other example of it. Okay. So therefore, so no proof for what Rish Lakish is saying. Maybe you do have to mix roig tofel with them, but you can't prove it from the Mishnah. Okay. Now, when we say in our Mishnah that mei grisin refers to you chew split beans, and the Rama describes it, basically that's what it means. In other words, you chew them and mix them with a lot of saliva in the mouth. But our Mishnah, therefore, is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. D'tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda has a different definition of mei grisin. Rabbi Yehuda, mei grisin reiseach. Mei grisin is defined as you cook them to the boiling point, but over sheyitin l'soyche melach. And they're right before the point where you would put salt into them, because salt reduces the power of them and will make it that they're not going to be so effective at cleansing. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it has nothing to do with chewing them, it just has to do with boiling them until they're at the boiling point and ready to have salt put into them. So the Gemara says, what's this lashon over? My mashma dahai over lishna dach dumiyu. Where do we see that the word over means right before? So Omer of Nachmei. Well, because that the over sheet and the shemelach means before you put salt in. So if you meant before, usually the word would be koidim. So what is over? Where do we see that over means before? Amar of Nachmeitz, the Amar Kro, because you have a pasuk in Shmuel, Vayoras Achimas derech hakikar, Vayavaras hakushi. Achimas ran by way of the kikar, and he passed by the kushi. It's at the end of the story of Avshalom's rebellion over there. Avshalom has just gotten killed. Yoav wants somebody to go and inform David, and break the news to him gently, because after all, Avshalom was his son. So this kushi offers to go. Achimas also offers to go, and he was the son of a Kohen Gadol Tzadik. Anyway, the kifter, so the kushi starts running, but Achimas keeps on bugging Yoav that he wants to go because he figures, I guess, he'll be able to break the news more gently. Whatever it is, so finally Yoav tells him finally go, and he goes and he takes a shorter route by Yavar at Kushi, and he overtook the kushi. So we see that the word over means before.
He overtook meaning what?
He overtook meaning he passed him by. Yeah. Abaya Olamehel. Abaya says, I'm another pasuk that expresses the idea that over means before. Pasuk from Parshas Vayishlach, who over his name. It says, if you have Yaakov's wives and children are standing over there awaiting Esav, and Yaakov passed before them. So we see again that over means going before. The Iboy is same Olamehel. Another possibility, you can use a pasuk from Micha. Vayavar Malkam Lifneim Vashem Berosham, their king passed over before them, and Hashem is at their head. It's referring to Yemos Mashiach. Going to most of the Mephoshim. Anyway, the point is all these sukkim show that over means before. The Nemuka Yosef actually points out that now we have this word over comes up in other places in Halacha, in particular in a number of places. The Gemara points out that you have to make a bracha over l'asiyotam. You generally speaking, you make a bracha on a mitzvah before you do the mitzvah. When you're ahead of the mitzvah. So the Nemuka Yosef points out, based on our Gemara, based on other Gemaras, that the word over means right before. So in other words, it's not, for example, let's say you make the bracha, let's say on tefillin or tzitzis or what have you, and 5 minutes later you put it on, you make it right before you do the mitzvah.
Can you apply it to the word Ivri or the way of explanation?
No idea. But anyway, the point is, we see over here from our Gemara also that according to Rabbi Yochanan, and the point would be the beans have to be almost, not just before, but almost ready. Like the last thing you'd need would be to put it, they're just at the point where you'd be putting in salt if you were cooking them to eat. So in other words, we're not talking about that they're a few minutes away from reaching the boiling point. We're talking about they're just at the boiling point and you're about to put salt in them. And then right before you put the salt, you take some of it and apply it to the steak.
Yeah.
That's the point. In other words, if it was kodim would mean any time before, it could mean even 5 minutes before, but miyad would mean immediately. Over means right before. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Meirag Lyim Shechmi. So we said the third ingredient, the third chemical is urine that fermented. Tana, we learn in a brayta, kamachimutzam shloisha yamin. What's the minimum amount of time they have to be left to ferment? It's 3 days. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yechanan points out in this connection, all these shiurim, all these rules that the chachamim gave as far as the chemicals that you have to apply to a kesem, really we need an explanation of the explanation. We need a definition of the definition. For example, when it comes to this urine, we have to ask, the yelad or the zakin, are we talking about you're supposed to be using urine from a young person or from an older person? So Rashi explains the urine of an older person might be more effective. It might be more concentrated. Tosfos actually discusses maybe not. Maybe it might be the other way around. Maybe a younger person's is. Whatever. The point is, it's not clear. The ish or the isha. Do we mean from a man or from a woman? Mechusim or megulim. Do we mean that for those 3 days they've been left uncovered or they've been left covered or uncovered? The moisachama or the moisachshamim. We're talking about during the summer when it's more potent or during the winter. So Tosfos says part of the question may be, in other words, when we're saying that it needs 3 days to ferment, are we talking about, let's say, for example, maybe if it's stronger urine, let's say, for example, from a younger person, according to Tosfos' explanation, maybe you don't need 3 days, maybe less than 3 days is enough for it to be effective. Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan is saying, in other words, it's hard to see from the Mishnah to be clear on what these dinim are. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, the tzorich b'chaskis shalosh pamim, we said when you apply each one of the seven chemicals, you have to rub them 3 times. You have to rub the cloth 3 times. Now, rubbing involves a back and forth motion. So, boy, Rabbi Yemiya, am tuye v'asuye chad, is the back and forth considered one time? Or maybe the back is considered one motion and the fourth is considered the other. So, in other words, do you have to do back, forth, back, or do you have to do back, forth, back, forth, back, forth? How much does it take? How many times do you need to do it? Do you need to do 6 motions or 3? So what is it? The answer is take, or we're not sure. So therefore, to be on the safe side, the Rambam Paskins, you would do it, you would have to do 6 motions. Yeah, similar to Nanuim. This question comes up in other places in chat as well. We said in the Mishnah, we said, what if you applied the chemicals out of order? So we said it doesn't count. But we learned in a braise, so a little more detail about that. Suppose you use the later chemicals before the earlier ones. So let's say, for example, Rashi says, you started from number 4, Neser, and you applied that, and then the following 3 after that. That's the point. Red couple is going to come first. In this particular case, the person used Neser, the fourth item first. And then he did the 5th, 6th, 7th, and then started over with the 1st, 2nd, 3rd. So, Tony Chodder, one Braita says, Shneem Oluloi, Rishonim Lo Oluloi. One Braita says that the second ones count, meaning in other words, the second group counts, but the first one does not count. The Tani Edach, Rishonim Oluloi, Shneem Lo Oluloi. The other Braita says the first ones that he did, the first ones count, the second ones don't. So first of all, you have a contradiction between the Braises. And second of all, what on earth does the second Braise mean? What's the logic to say that the Neser and so forth should count when you did them without doing the first 3 before them? Amar Abaya, Aidi v'Aidi, Shneem Oluloi v'Lo Rishonim. Both Braises mean the same thing, that the second group, which he did later on, count. So that when he started, when he got to the point of doing Roik Topol and the ones after it, those count. The ones that he did before that we ignore. Oh my, Rishonim. So what does the one Braisa mean when it says that when it says that Rishonim count? It's calling them Rishonim l'kisidron. It's not that he actually applied them first. They're called Rishonim in terms of when we look in the order of the Mishnah, those are the ones that should have been done first. Ushnim Lahabarasan, the other Braisa, which calls them the second one, is referring to them as how he actually do it. He actually did them as the second group. But both Braises are telling us the same thing. In other words, we'll ignore the Nestor and Boris and so forth that he did. We'll allow that the Roif Tuffel and May Griffin and so forth that he did count, and the ones that he did before them don't count, and he has to continue with all of them in order.
So if he did half of them, then
that's what we're saying. So what we're saying is, as long as he did some of them in the proper order, those ones that he did in the proper order will count. Yeah. The ones before them won't count, but then I'll have to continue and do the rest in order.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says. Okay, so now we're done with the matter of Psamim. Now we're going to take up the matter of Vestas. We've talked about Vestas earlier in the Masechta a number of times. Now we're going to get into it in a little more detail. Now, we've learned before that there's a few different kinds of Vestas, and we're going to be discussing that in the Mishnah and in the Gemara over here. You have, first of all, there are Vestas that depend on a certain, on certain days. It can be a certain fixed number of days from one to the next, or it can be a certain fixed day of the month, or it can be any other. We're going to see in the Gemara a number of possible patterns. And then you also have another kind called Vesta Guf, which is what our Mishnah is going to be dealing with, where a woman has certain bodily symptoms that she experiences shortly before she becomes nidah. That kind of thing is called Vesta Guf.
But it's not a regular vest.
So in other words, the idea would be, so according to the Rambam, actually, according to the Rambam, in order for it to be considered a vest kavua, it would have to actually be both. It would have to be, let's say, for example, the first one in our Mishnah is going to be where she feels all of a sudden a lot of yawning. She feels that, you know, she has an attack of yawning. So according to the Rambam, let's say she has that every 30 days, and so every 30 days she feels this attack of yawning, and then shortly after that she starts menstruating. According to most of the other Rishonim, it's not. Just the Vesta Guf by itself, even without a fixed number of days or a fixed month or a fixed day of the month or whatever, would be enough to establish a vest, as long as it happens three times. So the Mishnah says.
Some person can say you need the Vesta Guf also, and some don't.
So everybody agrees there is such a thing as a Vesta Guf. The Rambam holds that a Vesta Guf would be that it's accompanied by it happens at regular intervals. According to everybody else, the regular intervals aren't necessary as long as you have an established pattern where, let's say, she has an attack of yawning every time before she starts menstruating. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Kol Isha Shiesh La Vest Daya Shaita. Now with this line we learned earlier in the Masechta, when a woman has a fixed vest, then Daya Shaita, then we say, when she bleeds, she's only Tomei from then on. We don't apply the concept that she's Tomei Misafik up to 24 hours before, because we have the concept called Orach Bizmanei Ba, the blood of Nida comes at the Orach in this case is like the word Orach Kanoshim in Parshas Vayera. It means the way, it means the established way of women. So it means, in other words, that Orach, the Nida, comes at its expected time. We don't expect it to come any earlier. So therefore, if she has a regular vest, let's say every 30 days or every 15th of the month or what have you, then there's no reason to assume that it started any earlier than that.
And Daya Shaita means...
So that's Daya Shaita means, therefore, that's enough. So it's enough to say that she's Tomei from when she sees the blood. We don't have this concern that we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, that maybe the blood started coming out 24 hours before and was held in by the wall, by the vaginal walls or whatever. We don't do that. So the Elohein of Vestas, so the Mishnah says, so what are examples of Vestas? Mefahekes, suppose that the woman regularly before she has her period, she's Mefahekes. Rashi over here uses the French word that she stretches, like when a person feels tired and they stretch like this. Mefahekes. The word Rashi uses is strelier. Tosfos actually disagrees with that and says it means yawning. Rashi himself in some other places also explains that mefahekes means yawning. Okay. Another example is that she me'ateshes, which means one part of itush means either sneezing or passing gas. In some places in Shas it means one, some places it means the other. Over here, Tosfos translates it by a French word that means sneezing. V'chesheshes v'fi kreisa, it's sterner.
Oh,
there's a fancy word in English for sneezing. It's sternutation. It comes from the same root. Yeah. Okay. B'cheshesh, a lot of these things, you have different explanations among the Rishonim what the exact word means, but the truth is there's not necessarily much of a nafka minna between the explanations. Because practically speaking, any time you have one of these types of symptoms which regularly happens, as Tosfos points out, we're not just talking about that it's a one-time thing. We're talking about a regular thing, that she has an attack of yawning or an attack of stretching or whatever regularly before she has it. Nowadays, a vet that group is somewhat uncommon. And yeah, women have premenstrual syndrome, but not necessarily. Not right. Because sheshes, but anyway, practically speaking, almost any of these things can be considered a vestigial. Yeah. Because sheshes befikreisa, or you can have the woman feel the pain by her navel.
Because
Rashi explains befikreisa means negative burda, right? Means behind her navel. Or she's pulling me'aha, or at the bottom of her innards, meaning in her womb. Or she has a flow. Now the Gemara is going to say, what do you mean? The flow itself is me down the face of it. So what do we mean by that? We'll see in the Gemara.
What do you mean
shefas? We're talking about things that precede the midah, not that they themselves are the accident. Another possibility is that she's seized by smamoris. Rashi translates smamoris by a French word that means basically chills or shivers.
What's the word?
Frissonish, whatever, like frisson is a fancy word in English for shivers. Like, yeah, then different explanation that Rambam understands a little bit differently. It means something like goosebumps, like her hair standing on end, whatever. Again, there's not really much of a nafkah minah in halacha. V'chein kayot behen, similar kinds of symptoms can be a vesek. And the Mishnah says, "V'chol shekavol ashloisha pamim." Whenever she's established that these things happen three times, hareis a vest, then she has a vest to wear for it. So, in other words, again, according to the Rambam, we're talking about that they happen at regular intervals. According to everybody else, they don't have to be at regular intervals, but every time, for three times or more in succession, before she menstruates, she has these kinds of symptoms, and it ends the same symptom every time. Then, yeah. Okay. So, good morning. Yeah. Well, and soon after that, the blood starts coming. No, but in other words, the point is that those things, then it establishes that therefore, in the future, so if she had, in Tishrei, she had an attack of yawning, and shortly after that she menstruated, and in Cheshvan the same thing, and in Kislev the same thing, so now in Tavis, once she starts having an attack of yawning again, then she knows that her period's on the way, and she's also to be with her husband.
She's also from the time she has...
From the time, the pastor said she... Yeah, the pastor said. So then we're asked, Tanena Chodazim. Now, why does the Mishnah need to tell us that Daya Shaita, if she has a vest? We learned at the very beginning of the Masechta, Kol Isha Sheyesh LaVest Daya Shaita. So why does our Mishnah need to repeat it? The answer is, Hosam Avestis Diyoimi Hocha Avestis Digufa. The difference is, there we were talking about vestis that depend on a number of days. For example, every 15 of the month, or every 30 days, or whatever. Hocha Avestis Digufa. Our Mishnah is telling us that the same concept applies if she has a vest Digufa. As the Mishnah said, Elohim Vestis, Hosim Mafakes, Mafakes, Mafteshes, Vacheshes, 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 same thing, that if she has a regular vest aguf, then again we say it's just as good as a vest yomim, and daya shaita, and she doesn't have the 24 hours before that she's coming to suffer. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean v'shefas? Shefas, or shop of Aldra, what do you mean if she has a flow? If she has a flow, that itself is the nidah. What do you mean? She's constantly having a shefa, then she's constantly having a flow, so then there's no vest. On the all of bread that the shefas dam tomi mitos dam tahor. What it means is, in other words, if she has a regular thing where she starts having a flow of dam tahor, what we learned in the second parak, we learned that there were only certain colors that will make her tummy. So suppose she has a regular pattern of that she starts having something else, something that's not one of the five colors, and shortly after that she starts having one of the five colors. That would be what we mean in the Mishnah Shefas. That would be another example of a vestige. So if she has regularly, let's say, for example, if she starts having, let's say, a yellowish discharge, which we said yellow is not one of the five colors, and then shortly after that it starts coming red, then the next time, she has after three times that this happens, then the next time she has a yellow discharge, then she knows that it's already on the way, and then it's a vest, and then we say she has a vest for her, and the 24 hours on the clock. Okay. Yeah.